Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Oh, that is a brilliant goal. Well, the evening started with a superb strike from Bentley and has ended with an equally impressive shot by Genus.
Trying to thread one through for Billy Sharp. It's blocked. It comes back to him. Then he threads one through for Genus. Inside right channel. Through on goal and digs it into the net. And Jermaine Genus has made it 4-1.
Our Ramble Meets guest today was the second most expensive teenager in British football, was the PFA Young Player of the Year, played under the legendary Sir Bobby Robson at Newcastle, won the League Cup at Tottenham, played for England and went to the World Cup in Germany. And since then, he's carved out a media role which goes beyond punditry and co-commentating and into mainstream presentation, anchoring magazine shows and hard-hitting documentaries on knife crime and police stop and search. So our Ramble Meets guest, hello, Jermaine Genus. JJ, how are you?
How are you doing, Poogers? That was very nice. That was a lovely intro. Thank you very much.
Well, I think it shows the breadth of what you did when you were playing, and of course, since you've retired. Now, is that your PFA award over your right shoulder?
Yes, it is, actually. Yeah.
Oh, good.
My Young Player of the Year award sits pride of place in the office. Yeah, it's that was obviously a big moment for me in my career. And actually, it was a big moment for Newcastle. That whole year, we got to the Champions League. We qualified for the Champions League. I think Bobby got some form of like recognition at the PFA Awards as well for his obviously services to the sport. And I picked up Young Player of the Year. And it was great. We had a big table and, you know, all kinds of people. Like we had AP McCoy on the table and stuff as well. It was a really special night. So yeah, it's pride of place in the office, that.
Quite right too. It's interesting, JJ, because I think in the media, so I'm as guilty as anybody, we're all obsessed about what you won. What medal did you win?
Yeah.
What did you win as a team? And yet I wonder, it sounds as if an individual award, although you would never put it above a team award, an individual award can mean just as much.
I think where the PFA awards mean just as much, or if not more, is because it's voted by the players. It's voted for by your peers. And it doesn't get any more special, I don't think, for a footballer to get recognition from the players that they're playing against on a week-in, week-out basis. It's okay, you know, journalists and obviously winning trophies as a team has a different special bond about it. But, you know, to be recognised by your fellow pros as the best, best young player or the best player that year, it's a different feeling, you know. It's the people that are out there with you week in, week out competing. So, yeah, it is special.
Well, look, you've teamed up with Haycar, the official sponsor of the FA Cup coverage on BT Sport. So you've got an FA Cup series of content this season, speaking to fans about their cup memories and sharing your own as well. And in this season, of course, which has been horrible for fans, what stood out to you about their stories, especially with no one in the grounds this year?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose all the fans were amazing. I mean, I spoke to a guy called Rhys in particular, who is a big Portsmouth fan. And their passion, Pooh, is always, it never surprises me. It never surprised me, the fans' passion. Actually, their dedication in terms of going to the games. And they kind of, they talked me through their whole story of kind of from the morning, getting up, having breakfast with their, with their dad. I think his granddad, I think it was his last trip that his granddad had to Wembley as well, going to that cup final. They beat Cardiff, didn't they, in the final? But the whole experience of it and gaining some insight as to kind of when they're getting on the coach or if they're driving, and just the banter between opposing fans at the game and so on. And it just made me realise just how much we're missing fans. I think the players have been incredible in terms of maintaining the standard of football without fans. I really do. But having spoke to them and their experiences, it was a real kind of shining light on just the individual stories, and not so much the mass nature to fans, but the individualisms of like what people are missing out on, the memories they're missing out on a day-to-day basis. So, we're going to have fans back in the stadium, aren't we, for this semi-finals, which is amazing for anybody that's going to be able to kind of get those tickets. So I think Haycar's involvement within it all and their ability to, to give back to the fans that have been able to miss out has been a huge, huge plus for the fans.
Looking through your life, really, you came into the orbit of two legendary English football men. One you've mentioned, Bobby Robson, we'll get to in a second, who you've known very well. The other, I'm wondering if you knew at all, but you grew up in, I'm going inverted commas here, his city.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Clough.
Yeah,
Clough. How much were you aware of, so you're born in 1983, so you were 10 when Cloughy retired. How much were you really aware of his impact and what he'd done for Nottingham, the city, and Nottingham Forest?
Oh, you know what? When you are at Nottingham Forest as a kid, I was there from the age of, I think, 8 years old. And it's just drilled into you. There's a Nottingham Forest way of playing football at their centre of excellence at the time, which is obviously now the academy. And then also there was the becoming a man, almost, that I think Cloughy had imprinted on the football club and how to carry yourself in and around the football club and off the field as well. And, I was there. I mean, I was at the game, actually, when they got relegated. I think it was one of his last games. We got to play on the pitch at halftime for my school. And after the game, it was obviously a bit of a sad affair because last game of the season, he gets sacked and stuff. But he was always in and around the building. So I've got a lovely picture of in my first year as an apprentice, and Cloughy was just kind of walking around. I don't know if he was filming some documentary or whatever, and I was cleaning boots by the pitch, and someone kind of stopped him and said, "Oh, trust me, it's worth having a picture with him." And he stopped, he put his arm around me, we had a good chat, and it's a picture that I really enjoy because of his just, the synergy that Brian Clough has at Nottingham Forest is huge. And actually, just quickly on that, when I was at school, Cluffy, he used to have a corner shop that I think he owned, like not far from my school. So at dinner breaks, we would like go to the chippy or whatever, but then we'd go into the local corner shop to get a drink. And he used to sit behind the counter, just reading the paper. And it's like, God, this guy's like, he's won 2 European Cups, he's a Forest legend, you know, and he just sits behind the counter. I think he just used to read the post and just go through stuff and he'd keep an eye on you and go, behave yourselves. And that was it. It was incredible.
The man with the green sweater. An embrace for the law on his last home appearance. Whatever his failings, whatever his foibles, he's been a power of good to the game of football. An emotional welcome from a packed City ground. He doesn't look to be too far away from tears.
I often think in life you can't regret things you have no control over. Yeah. So maybe you feel it's just a shame you couldn't have played for him. You weren't old enough to play for him, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just think there's something about those managers around that era that really had the ability to, to mould you not only as a player but as a man. And I know when I kind of listen to Roy Keane talk about him, it's you can see the influence of the Brian Clough had on Roy. And actually, like when I left Forest, there were 3 bids that came in for me at the time. One of them was United, but Sir Alex said he wouldn't go above and beyond for it's a privilege to play for the club. And obviously there was Leeds and Newcastle, but United, I knew I wasn't going to play, but there's a big part of me when I look back now that thinks, God, I wish I'd have maybe given that a go just to be around someone like Roy as a player who maybe would have understood that transfer from Forest and, probably been harsh on me, don't get me wrong, but maybe it's like, it's the Forest way, it's what I maybe would have needed. But like you said, hindsight and so on and so forth. But in turn, I still went to go and play for another great in Sir Bobby.
Well, I was about to say, and that must have been... Will you talk us through Sir Bobby as the football tactician, Jermaine? Because yeah. I think it's a bit easy on the outside to look at Sir Bobby as paternal and lovely and cuddly. And, particularly if you look at Italia 90, the players ran the team and changed the system, which they all deny, by the way, don't they? They did. Will you talk us through Sir Bobby as much more than just the lovely figure that we saw on the telly?
Yeah, I think... one of the big things that always comes back to me now with Bobby was if you ever overcomplicated things, he used to go crazy. He used to hate it. He used to always come with this phrase, simplicity is genius. He used to just ram it down your throat. It'd just be like, the game's simple. Stop complicating it. And don't get me wrong, from a tactical point of view, I don't specifically remember us going into many games where it was like, right, I've got a master plan here and we're going to do this, this and this. It was just very much do your job. Your job today, Jermaine, is get forward. When Gary Speed goes, you stay, and vice versa. And on the wings, he used to go, Lauren Robert, Nobby Solano, get up, get those crosses in, get back, tuck in. It was, it made the game easy. And I do think sometimes, don't get me wrong, we have genius managers now that play, the game's played so different. But I remember kind of making my transition from Newcastle to a new manager and then to come into Tottenham. And I was all of a sudden playing in a 3 in midfield where Carrick sat a bit deeper. David was off the left. I was the right in midfield. But then I had Lennon right next to me. And I was like, it took me forever to figure it out. It was so complicated. And then, you just realised that there was genius in everything that Bobby did was just the simplistic nature of it all. And actually... knowing how to get the best players on the pitch to do the job. And that, I think, from a tactical point of view, was where he was very good.
Is that not the way that it was in the 80s and 90s? We mentioned Brian Clough, Bobby Robson, Arsene Wenger, Alex Ferguson, who are not the micromanagers, which clearly Pep Guardiola, Tuchel obviously is, Klopp obviously is, and I suspect Mourinho... is, stroke was, someone else can say that, or Arteta wants to be. That is a big contrast, isn't it? They're the sort of more broader picture that you played under. Today, they're very micromanagers.
Yeah, they are. And in a weird way, I think Bobby, if anything, he probably came a little bit more under the micromanagers from a person point of view, not from a tactical point of view, where the details of where and when, when I played under Andre Villas-Boas, who was, you know, a Mourinho disciple, I just was very frustrated a lot of the time playing, because it was, you know, he would micromanage you to the point where, you know, I'd get the ball in midfield and he'd go, Jermaine, don't stand there. And he'd move you like a metre to the left. And I'd be like, you know, I've played here my whole life and I know where I like to receive the ball and where I feel comfortable. And I get it. That is their way of doing things. And they've been successful managers in doing that. But yeah, I think a lot of the old school managers, they put their trust in players and they kind of said, listen, I know you're a good player. They give you the belief to go out there and perform and then basically just work within the framework of all
that. That's the word. You said it, JJ. That's the word, trust, isn't it? Trust.
Yeah, it is. You know what you're doing. It's huge. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Boogers, when I went to Newcastle, I had 2 weeks of the worst training you've ever seen in your life. I had this massive price tag on my head. I thought I was confident. And then I was just, you know, in training, I couldn't control a ball. And then our first game was Sunderland away. We trained on the Thursday at St James's Park and Bobby walked up to me and was just like, by the way, you're going to be starting on Saturday. So just get your head around it. And I just thought, what have you been watching for the last 2 weeks? Because I've been absolutely shocking. But that was it. He had full trust in me.
I thought about this a lot, and we have talked about this a lot on all the shows you and I do and everybody else. If you could land a sort of 1996 Arsene Wenger ahead of his time with the money today of anybody at St James's Park, what could Newcastle United be in terms of a football club?
What, if they had
Wenger from the mid-90s, a bit of a revolutionary, and they had them, you know, frankly, money was limitless, what could they be?
Oh, my word. I mean, I think people tend to forget what Arsene Wenger did in terms of the game in England. You know, I played against a lot of his best teams, and they are still some of the best teams that have ever, you know, graced the Premier League. His kind of mindset and culture of tactically playing as well, by the way, you know, not playing with, you know, natural wingers all the time, played with inverted wingers, you know, the way they moved was, and athletically they were just a different breed. If they had somebody like him, you know, it was, he then was what Guardiola is now, essentially. That is exactly what everybody wanted to play for him. Everybody was thinking, God, what would it be like? How does he do it? So if Newcastle managed to get something like that, with the money, all I can say is it's what they deserve. Yeah, I feel like they've been through kind of like 10 years of hell, really. And that's not a jab at the managers, because I think the managers that have gone in there have done a really good job and done the best they can with what they've got. But they, you know, they need some flair up there. They need some, you know, the place is full of passion. If they had that, Boogers, you know, we're talking league titles in terms of, you know, the Keegan era where they were chasing league titles again.
Because those Champions League nights, don't forget, you played the Champions League at Newcastle. Yeah. At St James's Park must have been as good a night's atmosphere-wise as you ever played in.
You know what? You know, sometimes when I sit and do Match of the Day with Alan Shearer, we sit and talk about those Champions League nights. And, you know, I think one of my first game was in the San Siro and we drew 3-3 against an Inter Milan side that had Zanetti and Christian Vieri and Cordoba and all these world-class players in it. And the San Siro was full. It was packed. And I think like 10,000 Geordies came. And, you know, we just had the time of our lives in that tournament. You know, it was 3-3. We obviously had that famous game in Feyenoord where we came back last minute to qualify. And, you know, beating Juventus at St James's Park was just like, you know, that team was full of World Cup winners and stars, David, Nedved, Thuram, Buffon. And, you know, their night's what I think the club deserves. And, you know, for them not to have that for a long period of time, it'd be like me telling you, Poogers, actually, it's kind of what Arsenal are going through now to an extent, really. You know, Arsenal fans have been so used to European football and now they probably appreciate just how good Arsene Wenger was.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We talked about your young player award over your shoulder. Your team medal, as it were, came at Tottenham and the League Cup. And that was a really special run, wasn't it? Because you hammered Arsenal, which means everything. And you scored in both legs in the semi. And then you beat Chelsea, who were, you know, along with Man United, the team of the decade, really, weren't they? So that very special.
Yeah, I think that's what people underestimate. I think sometimes the trophy kind of gets belittled a little bit. But if you actually look at the last, you know, probably 5-6 winners of it in England. I mean, Man City, I think, have won 4 of them. They're not easy to come and get, you know, otherwise everyone would have one. And I think in particular, you know, our Tottenham team is very similar to this Tottenham team now. They were full of players that were good, that were going to go on and do more, but were desperate to win something as a group of players. We had Berbatov, Keane, a very young Bale was in the side, Ledley King, Jonathan Woodgate, you know, really good players. And we went to Man City, went down to 10 men in the first half and beat them in the quarterfinals. Then we beat Arsenal over 2 legs, who are, you know, a constant Champions League side. And then when we come up against Chelsea, we're all thinking, oh, they're going to rest a few in the final. It was Terry, Lampard, Drogba through the middle, Essien. It was their team. And I thought, oh my word. And then they go 1-0 up and we come back and we obviously win it in extra time, which was, oh, honestly, like for Tottenham, for it to be their last trophy that they've won, tells you everything about how difficult it was to get over the line.
Woodgate going in as well! Tottenham take the lead in the first seconds of extra time, and it's Jonathan Woodgate! Tottenham Hotspur have won their first major trophy for 9 years! Jonathan Woodgate, the hero! His goal in the first seconds of extra time! Chelsea, the holders, relinquish their trophy.
Well, I was going to say, if I'd said to you at the bottom of the steps at Wembley, by the way, Tottenham won't win another trophy for a minimum 13 years, you'd look at me and go, A, leave me to celebrate, but B, that'd be stupid. There's Tottenham's set up to win, especially now with the ground.
100%. And you know what? I think the one thing that I realised about winning is the minute you win something, you get a feeling of, I want to win more straight away. It's like a drug. It's like, oh, I need to win more. And we got to the final the next year as well against United. And we absolutely battered United and they beat us on penalties. But for us to go, for Tottenham to go so long and not have won anything with the teams they've had and the way that, you know, the stadium, the way that the thing is built now, it's bad. It really is. They need to find a way to get over the line. And it's not going to be easy against City. So
It's not an easy situation Tottenham are in at the moment, is it? With Jose Mourinho and, you know, and it's not even an elephant in the room anymore. Everyone's talking about, and with Harry Kane. It's a difficult one to manoeuvre through this, isn't it, for Tottenham?
It is. From a Daniel Levy's point of view, it's almost like he's going to be forced into a double down type situation. Whether that's Mourinho or not, his key job this summer is to keep Harry Kane. And, you know, I've been at the club with Dan. He's not going to be forced into selling anybody. You know, he held on as long as he could with Berbatov. He kept Bale and Modric at the season, probably a year, maybe 2 years longer than they wanted to be. But this Harry Kane scenario is not going away. He deserves better, I think, is the honest opinion of most Tottenham fans. And the only way to, I suppose, appease Harry Kane's needs is to bring players to the football club that that he believes will give him the best chance of getting into the Champions League next year and winning a trophy. I think defensively, they need a bit of an upheaval. And then the big, big question is Jose. That's the biggest question of all. You know, does he believe that Jose is the man moving forward? It's a hard one to call because he could end up winning, you know, this trophy, and it could change things. It could change the dynamic of how people feel. But there's no doubt, I feel he's lost a few players this year. And the impact of that for next season, it's tough. It's tough for Daniel to make that decision.
It seems if he has lost them, it seems to have happened very quickly, doesn't it? This is the bit I can't quite get my head around. You go back to the autumn, beating Arsenal, which is obviously a key result for Tottenham fans, if not players, go top of the league. You think, oh, I could see the way Tottenham are playing. I could see something about them. This seems such a roller coaster, this Tottenham season, doesn't it? Up, down, up, down.
I think one thing we spoke about earlier with the old school managers is trust. And Jose doesn't trust his players and they don't trust him. And that's a big problem because he's always had players in teams he's done well. He's had players that will go to war for him. And he now has a group of players that I'm not saying they don't want to go to war for him, but I feel like they have broken his trust by lack of performances at times and not probably showing that grit and determination that he wants in moments because they've, what are they, third in the table in terms of losing from winning positions? It's something ridiculous like that. So there's no trust there. And then on the player's side of things, it's like, well, who's getting dropped this week? Who's getting hung out to dry in the press this week? You know, Dele Alli's had a whole season of it. Eric Dier's, you know, been on the conveyor belt of in and out. You know, there's a long list. If you're not Højbjerg this season and Ndombele, Kane or Son, the rest are just, you know, it's a mismatch. So that's where there's been a big failure. You know, I think that side of things is if he does lose his job in the end, will be the big breakdown.
Harry Kane's obviously got the summer to look forward to. Let's just talk about your England experiences before we talk about the Euros. How do you reflect on your England career?
There's no doubt that there's a lot of regret within it. You know, as an honest opinion, I think that we were looking at an era of English football where we had some of the best centre midfielders in British football history. Could we have made it work better? Was there an element of, you know, I look at certain teams, some of the best teams that have ever played, and there's always a bit of a foil to, you know, the glamour. So if there's a Gerrard and a Lampard in there, did we need a Beckham? Did we need a, you know, I'm not saying they're not top players, but did they need somebody in there that did something different? Whether that was me, Scott Parker, Michael Carrick, because we were kind of, I mean, me and Michael Carrick mainly, I would say, were the two that were always kind of sat there watching from the sidelines. And then I think later Scott Parker came into it. But, you know, I think even for somebody like Carrick to sit and be only sat with probably, what, 30-odd caps for his country tells you the story as to how difficult it was. I mean, I ended up with 21. Which I'm proud of. But I think there was a key moment in 2008 when we won the League Cup. Capello comes in and I kind of get wind that he likes me as a player. And I'm like, right, brilliant. We go to training, I'm flying. He tells me I'm starting, which didn't happen very often. So I thought, great, you know, I've got a manager here who's backing me. And also he played me in a position where I was just off Wayne Rooney, basically. So we had Gareth Barry, Gerrard sat, and he just said to me, he just kept saying, go, just do what you're doing for Tottenham and one day Ramos. Get forward, score me a goal. Play against Switzerland, played really well. Get forward, score a goal. In the second half, played really well. And then we had France next in the Stade de France. So obviously went back to our clubs. And I had a bit of an ankle problem. And one day Ramos pulled me and said, listen, we've won the League Cup. So we're in Europe already. Your ankle's a bit of a mess. So let's manage that throughout the season. But I want you to, you know, keep playing for England. So let's get you ready for the England games. You know, that will take your career forward. And I was like, brilliant. That sounds great to me. So then the next England squad comes for the France game and I'm not in it. And I'm like, I'd missed the game for Spurs the week before on the basis that I'm being rested for England games. And then all of a sudden, I'm not in the England squad. I've scored the game before. And then Capello comes out basically saying, if you're not playing for your club, then you can't play for your country. And that's when that whole thing started. So the minute he did that, I just thought, here we go again, me in England, just as I'm getting started, the rug gets pulled from underneath me. And I think the next time we met, we had Brazil and Qatar, and we had a bit of a falling out at halftime. I didn't really agree with what he was asking us. It was very much just camp in and survive, which we had better players to do that. And we had a bit of an argument at halftime. It wasn't much of an argument. It was just I didn't agree with what he said. And that was my last game in an England shirt, essentially. So it was a shame, you know, because I felt that moment, you know, the minute I scored that goal for Switzerland, I thought, I've got a role here. You know, Mike Loewen was on the bench, you know, and I'm playing just behind Wayne Rooney. And it was like, wow, this is, you know, this is something that could be the start for me going into a major tournament at the World Cup in 2010. And then like that, within an instant, it was taken away on the basis of miscommunication, probably. I think for a lot of us around that era, if we don't say we have some regret, then we'd be lying.
And it's bundled out. Close call for Switzerland. Perhaps if Rooney wasn't obstructed by all that facial hair, he would have gotten to it. On 40 minutes more from the Three Lions, Cole far side, fancy foot, Steven Lichtsteiner cross popped in by Jermaine Genus. And it is 1-0 to England. Genus and Capello celebrating their first goals with the side.
Well, certainly interviewing you a lot over the years. I mean, there was a photograph on Twitter the other day of the quarterfinal team in Portugal, Euro 2004. And I went, blimey. I mean, literally, world class is a bit, but I mean, a fantastic team. I mean, seriously. And you thought, how did that team not win? Do you think, looking from the outside now, that this team has a better feel about it? The whole golden generation, you know, Chelsea. I think there probably was a Chelsea Man U thing, to be honest, in the 2010s.
Oh, there definitely was. There definitely was.
Let's not pretend otherwise.
We weren't massively together as a group. I don't think it was even encouraged by anyone, really, that we were that together, which was weird.
They seem to be more now, don't they?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think Gareth's done a really good job of that. You know, I think that Gareth's understanding of being with England, you know, at every level, whether he was starting, whether he was on the bench or being at a major tournament, is very vast. It's vast. So he gets what every player in the team needs. I feel like they're a good group that enjoy meeting up with England and want to do the right things. My only fear is just the way we play sometimes, the style that we implement. But, you know, Gareth's not there to entertain anybody. He's there to win a trophy. And that's what people need to remember sometimes. And I think if we watch Portugal in the last European Championships, some of their games were horrible to watch. The whole European Championships weren't that pretty, if you remember, Pugas. But they got the job done. And essentially, that's all anybody remembers. So if he does that, then, you know, he'd be a great England manager.
I've got two more for you, one on England and one on the FA Cup. I'm a Sunday morning footballer. Are you taking Jude Bellingham to the Euros?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Good.
It's not even a question.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
No, it's not even a question, Pukas, because also, you know, that there, I think, is where, from a tactical point of view, it's make or break. Like, I love Calvin Phillips and I love Declan Rice. They don't work together. So I don't know what it is. You know, I watch Calvin Phillips on a week-in, week-out basis. He likes to play on his own as the deepest line midfield player. And I've played that role, and you like the space. It's like when I speak to Gary Lineker about strikers these days, and he'll always, you know, he loves playing with Beardsley.
Yeah, he's miles away.
And he'll say the real, yeah, he's like, you know what, people think that, he said, I used to hate it when people flooded the box, because that's my space. I want the space. So just stay away and let me do what I want to do. And it's the same for that pivot in midfield. You don't want to kind of think, right, I'm going to drift away, go and get the ball and turn around and Declan Rice is there. You just want to go away. I want this space. And I think Bellingham, he plays in a three at Dortmund. He understands the role. He gets forward. He gets back. He's fearless. Should he start? I don't know. You know, potentially I would start him. But there's no doubt he's in my squad. No doubt.
I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people go, well, he'll be better for the experience. And I always say, life is not a dress rehearsal. You do not know what's going to happen. He may get a terrible injury. He may be appallingly out of form. He may get a move which doesn't work out for him. He may look completely different.
It's happened to loads of players.
Of course it has.
Loads. It's happened to loads. We'll take them from experience. And then it's like, well, what do you mean? You know, and also, I think the one thing with this group of players, are they any better from their experiences? I don't know. You know, they've had a terrible campaign, obviously, in France. And then, you know, the World Cup after that was better. But they didn't play brilliantly. You know, they got through and did what they needed to do. But, you know, experiences are what they are. You've got to go and live them. You know, it's not about just watching from afar.
So my final one is, obviously you've got a Tottenham hat on and a Tottenham input into this one. But I wouldn't put it past Man City to win it all. I really wouldn't, would you?
No, definitely not. You know what? I did the game last night for BT, the game against Dortmund. And they've grown. They've grown as a team. They've grown within their experiences of getting knocked out in quarterfinals. Their calmness in that game was very apparent. And this is their week now, isn't it? Obviously. So they've got through that big one there. This semi-final they've got against Chelsea is massive. And I think he'll make changes because he's got to freshen it up, obviously. But the one thing with City, they freshen it up with the likes of, you know, Sterling, Gabriel Jesus coming into the team. You know, he's not weakening the side too much. So I don't think I've ever seen a team that I have got a lot of faith in the fact they could do the quadruple as much as this team. But as we saw with United when they won the treble,
The ball has to bounce your way.
Oh, my word. Does it have to bounce your way? It's not going to be simple. And they're going to have their moment. Whether that is going to be, you know, a last-minute winner, a penalty that they've got to score, they're going to have their moment throughout this last little period here. And it's just whether they take it or not. Ollie sticks it in the top corner to win them the Champions League. I think there's a...
Well, Bergkamp missed the penalty. Yeah, Bergkamp missed the penalty, which would have knocked them out.
Bergkamp misses a penalty. Giggs goes down the other end. Those little moments have to fall in line for a quadruple or a treble to happen. So, you know, I hope they do it. I really do. I like to see it in my lifetime, but I just think it's a big ask. It's a big ask.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.